welcome to the Production Talk podcast with me, Jan of mixartist.com.au. In this podcast series, we celebrate the modern way of producing music. We want to talk about all things related to songwriting, recording at home, and music production. So if you produce your music at home, this is the place to be. Please subscribe and recommend this podcast to all your friends. This is the Production Talk podcast, episode 75. Welcome back to another episode of the Production Talk podcast. At the beginning of this episode, as always, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the country that we are meeting on today, the Arakwal people of the Bundjalung Nation, and I would like to express my thanks and gratitude and respect to elders past, present and emerging. Today we're in a special place in the hills on the other side of Lismore, and with me is Dr. Fred Cole. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jan. It's nice to be here.
It is quite a phenomenal room that we're in. We're surrounded by pianos, so today is a piano special. But before we get into that, let me ask you to please share your background and your how it all started, where your interest in music and piano in particular came from, and the milestones of your career, please.
Okay, well, I grew up in a small village in the northeast of England. It was a mining village, but the mine shut when I was about seven, and my father was the local priest, vicar, I suppose, the Vicar of Dibley. In this case, it was the Vicar of Blackhall Colliery. And as a result of that, it was a very kind of working class village, and didn't have many friends. And for my seventh birthday present, I was given piano lessons.
Well, wow.
That was all I was given. So I had to be good, right? So I took up the piano. No one else in my family played. And we had an old overdamper piano, which I'll go into later. There are only really two types, overdamper and underdamper. But overdamper is the least desirable. And I pretty much wore that out. I went to a lady down the road who didn't slap me over the knuckles with a ruler. She encouraged me to play different pieces. In fact, she had to, because I hated practicing the same piece over and over.
Mm.
So there were a number of things that propelled me to immerse myself in learning piano and piano literature. One of which, I think, which is missing in modern life, is that the local library had an immense collection of sheet music.
Mm.
So I was able to,
that's right,
go and just get out scores of Sound of Music, My Fair Lady, Oklahoma, all of the. I won't say there was any pop music there, because there wasn't, but I was exposed to a large number of classical, a large part of the classical repertoire, and also the American musical tradition. And of course, I had no idea what jazz was, really. You know, occasionally something would come on the TV. I suppose TV came along when I was about eight. And a couple of years later, we actually got one. So, you know, my dad used to like the variety shows. And so I used to watch in awe as people like Oscar Peterson would come on, or Liberace, I remember as well. And over the years, I outgrew my first teacher, and she sent me to her teacher, who was a professor of music at Durham. And if I'd gone to him first, quite honestly, I would never have continued.
Mm. All right, why is that?
He used to fall asleep during the lesson. He used to chain smoke. The most attractive thing about the lesson was watching his cigarette turn to ash as he was totally motionless and waiting for it to fall off into his lap.
Oh, gee.
Anyway, ironically, my mother sent me a copy many years later when I was living in Australia, and he died of a heart attack in Sydney on holiday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, it was he must have known that I was there somewhere. Mm. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I could play the piano, and I was really good at sight reading, but it wasn't sexy, so I wanted to learn guitar. So I took up electric guitar. I looked at I remember growing up, we had a cornflakes packet, and on the back of there was winner guitar. You know, the sort of guitars you can buy at Kmart, you know. And I used to look at this and look at this. And eventually I saved up and I bought myself one and played it through some old Celestion record player speakers, which provided the appropriate amount of distortion and learned all of the solos off Led Zeppelin too. So, after a while you realize that guitarists are to a penny, but keyboard players are in short supply. So when I went to uni later on, I bought a Krumah, used to be called Crummy Krumah, electric piano, and I started playing guitar and piano. And then when I left uni, I moved to London and was fortunate enough to be asked to help build a recording studio. I was a loose end, and I'd done a session for somebody at Budget Recording Studios in High Holborn, and they were just in the process of building a new 16-track studio in Covent Garden, which was called Free Range Studios, which was a demo studio. And when we'd finished building the studio, they asked me if I'd like to become an engineer, and that was where my interest in technology and production started.
How long ago was that?
That was in 1975.
I was born in 75. Hanging out in studios when I was born.
Well, there have been many twists and turns between then and now.
It was a good year. It's also the year that Queen's Night at the Opera was recorded and mixed and released.
Right,
I think they might have been released the year after. But
I'll never forget, because in the studios in Holborn, the desk... there was an eight-track desk had come from Abbey Road, and the Beatles had used it to record one of their earlier albums on it.
Wow.
And in the next studio, Free Range Studios, the desk we had was a Sound Techniques desk, and it had been used to record the Groundhogs' Thank Christ for the Bomb.
Gee.
That's going back.
Okay. But nowadays you are specialized in pianos. You are the local piano tuner that everybody calls.
I am. It was interesting how that started, because I was living in Germany for a while and helping to run a jazz club in Munich. And I had some friends who lived north of Frankfurt, and they had a bomby old piano. I think, you know, another one of these overdamper things that I'm about to describe. And so I decided I wanted to play music with them, but it was totally unplayable. So I bought a couple of tools and I went up there and I spent 2 or 3 days wrestling with this thing and eventually got into some sort of shape. But I said to myself, look, there's got to be an easier way.
Mm.
And so that was when I started my learning journey. And so I went to a few workshops in Germany, and then later on, when I came to the Northern Rivers, which was in 1981, I went round and met the three local tuners who were all getting on in years and thinking about retiring, and two of whom were reasonably friendly and the other one was quite antagonistic.
Mm.
But all of them had their own ideas. And indeed, if you read technical literature on pianos, you'll find that there are many different ideas on how to approach different problems. So I went out and I bought 2 or 3 pianos and started to kind of learn with the help of 3 books that I got also from the local library in those days. And interestingly, they all had different techniques of tuning as well. Things change over the years, though.
Yeah, and of course.
Now there are probably 7 or 8 different tuning apps, ranging from totally hopeless to very professional. The most professional of which is one that I use to assist my tuning, is called Rayburn CyberTuner, but it also costs $2,000 and runs on iOS and Android. And you also have to pay $200 approximately a year to keep it going.
Oh, gee, that's expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
However, you know, one tuning will cover the yearly price. So, you know, it works out. It's good to, you know, sometimes you're in a situation where you're in a noisy, echoey hall, or you're in a preschool with like 40 kids yabbering and chattering, and it's impossible to hear really closely. And those things can be invaluable for that sort of scenario.
Right. All right, they basically allow you to focus or zoom in to something.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
And also the tuning process itself, most people don't understand this, right? A lot of the time when somebody asks you to go and tune their piano, what they really mean is something's not working.
Yeah.
They
something
equate
mechanical
that,
possibly.
Something mechanical. But they equate that to it needing tuning.
Yes. So basically, if somebody calls you in for piano tuning, it's often a general service.
Yeah. And that's that makes it tricky to, you know, because often people want to know, well, how much is it going to be? Well,
yes.
Yeah. So then you have to ask them a series of questions, which becomes quite tedious. Whereas what you really need to do is inspect the piano. And sometimes it's more effective, cost effective, to focus on the mechanical or voicing problems, I'll explain what voicing is in a minute, than to actually tune it.
Yes, okay.
Okay. Now, voicing is critical with pianos because if you imagine as you play a certain piece, you might practice it over and over and over again. Those particular notes that you play are obviously going to sustain more wear than the ones you don't play. Now, that wear has a couple of different effects. One, the actual regulation will change because the felts in the chain will become more compressed.
Yeah.
So you might have to put a bit more energy into that to get the same equivalent volume. But also, the hammer becomes harder because the felt in the actual hammer gets compressed.
Mm.
And that has the effect of it becoming more trebly.
I see.
So when you play a chromatic scale, all of the notes, one after another, it might go dong, 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 ding, dong, 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 ding, ding, dong, dong, ding.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Now, a piano every 4 or 5 years should have its hammers reshaped because the grooves that form in the hammer felt obviously match the strings.
Yeah.
So often the hammer will become displaced a little, and so the grooves won't match, and that changes the tone completely. So in order to loosen the screw on the hammer and line it up with the string, you must get rid of the grooves.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's not a big job, you know, but it involves sanding the hammers carefully, not on the tip, but towards the tip, so you get rid of the excess felt. And that changes the tone dramatically. And then what you do, to even up the tone, you needle the felt with a voicing tool, which is just a tool with three needles. And however, it's not something you should attempt yourself, because if you imagine a hammer to be kind of an oval shape, I suppose, if you needle near the tip, you will affect soft play. If you needle just back from the tip, so of around about 5 to 10 degrees maybe, you will affect medium play. And if you needle on the shoulder, you will affect loud play.
I see.
There's a lot of variation that can be.
Yeah, right.
So that's why I say often I can make more change and more difference with a voicing tool than I can by tuning it. I mean, obviously, tuning is great and is necessary. However, that is often overlooked by people.
Mm.
And that you might be able to do that in 10 minutes, or it might take you 2 hours.
And I guess for the owner of a piano, this is a gradual change. It wouldn't change
exactly
suddenly from today to tomorrow.
Exactly.
But over the course of months, sometimes years.
And sometimes
so
people
you may not notice.
Sometimes people can be horrified.
Mm.
Like often, if hammers are completely worn out and shot, and you put a new set of hammers on, depending on the consistency of felt that you use for those new hammers, you will change the tone to make it brighter, louder, or softer, mellower. And sometimes people are used to those bright sounds because the hammers have been completely worn out. When people give me a call to get their piano tuned, often it'll be more an issue that they have with the piano. Yeah. Something won't be playing, I know it won't be repeating. And that, especially in our climate here, where it's high humidity, that's often to do with the humidity and dirt forming a sludge in the hinge pin. Because there are three hinge pins in an upright and quite a few more in a grand. And they are a metal pin in a cloth bushing in a wooden part, for the most part. Some manufacturers have gone over to, well, for a while they used to use ABS resin, which was a form of plastic, and then Kauai in particular have changed to carbon graphite. And indeed, there's a company called WNG who make graphite replacement parts for any piano, upright or grands. And they don't use this method of metal in cloth. They use a kind of roller bearing system.
Wow, okay.
And look, it's unclear how they'll stand the test of time, but certainly I have a couple of friends who've replaced standard actions with WNG actions, and certainly the customer in the end has been very happy with the result.
Okay.
Okay, so back to this sticky key. There are two main causes of sticky keys on pianos. The first is, as I said, a combination of those three hinge pins in the piano action getting a little bit of too much friction.
And by sticky key, you mean a key that doesn't bounce back as easily as others?
Yeah, or key itself might bounce back, but the note won't repeat.
Yeah,
Or it'll pay the first time, perhaps. And then if you look inside, you'll just see the hammer coming back very, very slowly like that.
Yeah,
because they have springs which help the hammer to return. And if the jack has a spring, the hammer has a return spring of some sort, you know, so it has to be quite a lot of friction.
I see, yeah.
For the note not to repeat. However, one of the most common jobs we do in this area is pull the action apart and replace every single hinge pin.
I see.
Maybe only in the hammers, sometimes in the jacks, you know. So the pins can either tighten with a lot of playing, they can get too loose, and then the thing will wobble from side to side, and then obviously that needs to be repaired.
And could that be due to our warm climate here, the subtropical humid climate?
The humidity.
Yeah, right.
But also it's due to lack of use often. Often you might find in the middle of the piano where there's been a lot of use, a lot of wear, things will be too loose. And at the ends where no one goes, everything will be too tight.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
But that's only one of the causes. The other cause is in the key itself. Like the key, it has a pivot in the middle, and that's pivots on a metal pin. And then at the front, to keep it in place, it also, there's a slot, and the pivot and the slot are lined with a strong wearing bushing cloth. That can wear. If it's not corrected as it wears, because the front pin is oval and can be turned to take up the slack, but if you don't turn it, it becomes increasingly slacker and slacker and wobblier until eventually there's no felt left and you get clackety, clackety, clack.
Yeah, right. Don't want that.
No. So it can be that those bushings will tighten on the middle pin or the front pin. And it can also be that the key goes down onto the hole in the wood of the key, swells up and tightens. So when you pick up the front of the key, it should just drop. Often you pick it up and it'll just stay there, either because of corrosion on the bottom of that middle balance rail, it's called a balance rail pin, or the wood swelling up.
So how often should a piano owner call you in to look after a piano? What's a good interval? Once a year or more often?
Well, in this climate, ideally, even if the piano isn't being played, you should tune it a minimum of every 2 to 3 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Minimum. Even if you don't tune it, it should be checked, because the other thing that happens in this area is obviously moths, cockroaches, silverfish,
mice,
rats.
Mm.
If you live next to a macadamia plantation, I've seen it all. I've seen the rats eat completely through the keys.
Oh, no.
So there's just
a hole terrible.
In the middle of the keys.
Oh, okay, well, is there much you can do in a case like this?
Oh, let's not forget flood.
Yes, and of course flooding, yes. Yeah, right.
And fire.
Okay. So it's a rough place for pianos to live. Look, well, we are near Lismore here, and as we all know, at February 28, we had a devastating flood here. I guess a lot of people have lost so many things, among those some pianos.
Basically, everyone who lived in the flood area has lost their piano.
Yeah, right. We just spoke to Lisa from Hussey Higgs, and she actually mentioned that when her studio went under, some of the gear was recoverable. So with a lot of maintenance, a lot of effort, some of her valuable possessions like compressors and microphone preamps came back. Yes. What about pianos? What are the chances of a piano surviving a flood?
Zero. Well, having said that, if it goes in around about a foot, maybe, I would say it was the maximum, below the start of the treble bridge anyway, and you get in there right after the flood, which isn't always possible, and you hose the thing out with fresh water and then dry it out completely, then you'll get another 1 to 5 years out of it. But ultimately, because there's felt woven through the bottom of the strings, that felt will hold the moisture and the contaminants. And I lost maybe 14 pianos in the flood in 1989. I had a workshop in South Lismore, and one or two of those were fairly new. And so I, did my best to kind of keep them going. And for a couple of years, they did keep going. But when I saw them 10, 12 years later, half the strings were broken.
Yeah, right.
They had no tone. But the problem is the soundboards are sealed with lacquer, but the end of the soundboard is not.
And then water gets in.
Water
and
leaks.
Warps.
Yeah. You know, reaction causes the water just to sort of get sucked up into the board, and the tone dies.
Oh, okay.
So it's sad, but unfortunately I had to pronounce last rites for many beautiful pianos.
Oh, that's really sad. Can you give us some advice on choosing the right piano for different applications? Have you got any guidance? You know, are there particular pianos that work well for jazz, or would you recommend other ones for blues or rock or classical music?
Doesn't really work like that.
Okay.
There are good pianos and there are bad pianos. And there are extraordinary pianos, and there are hopeless pianos.
Okay.
And sometimes a hopeless piano might be right for a particular project, and other times an extraordinary piano might be too good.
Yeah.
It all depends on, I think, probably five factors. The first is, how well was it made in the first place? Because remember that in every era, there have been good, bad, and indifferent pianos.
Yes.
Every single era.
Okay.
And secondly, how has the piano been looked after? How has it been maintained? Has it been regularly maintained? Thirdly, have any external factors affected it?
Like humidity or...
Humidity.
Yeah, things like
that. Being dropped. Being next to a fireplace. Being underneath an air conditioner. Being in a draft. People often put pianos in corridors, and if you put in a corridor near the coast and the sea breeze is constantly blowing over it,
you can pretty much
say goodbye to it in a fairly short space.
So salty sea air is terrible for pianos. Draft makes it worse. Yeah.
The next is the quality of the hammer felt.
Mm.
You can often change the character and tone of a piano completely just by putting a different sort of set of hammers on it. And fifth, just sheer luck, coming across the right piano at the right time.
Mm.
Piano has to speak to you. You know, people sometimes, you're surrounded by pianos here. Sometimes people come out and I just show them what we have and then just leave them to it. And they just wander around and they play this. And sometimes they don't find one that speaks to them.
I see. So it's other like times a personal connection people have with the instrument.
And sometimes it comes down to how it looks. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It doesn't really have any effect for me. although I tend to get attracted to ones that really have something.
So am I. You know, look, the one in the corner with this beautiful woodwork.
Yeah, that's a Beale Northcote model.
Yeah.
And I saw that on Gumtree, I think.
It's beautiful.
I saw it in Gumtree. Mm. Nothing played. It was in really bad condition. We had to completely polish it. Had to rebuild the bass bridge. Had to replace just about everything. But as soon as I saw it, I thought, no, I have to have that.
And nice.
I'm actually surprised with the number of people who have really exquisite Federation style houses around here. I'm surprised it hasn't found a home.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, the three Beales that I have here, there was a songwriter, composer called Melia Norton, who lives over the coast, and she was in a band called Scarlet Affection. And during COVID, she wrote a piece for three pianos that went on as a part of a little festival in Bangalore, where there were chaperoned groups of however many, you could have 11 people taken around to different experiences. And at that time, I used three Yamahas for the three. The piece was just called Three Pianos. But I really wanted to do it. We were going to do it again in Lismore, and we were going to use these beautiful old Beales so it would have a bit more history.
Okay.
But then the flood happened, and first COVID happened, and then the flood happened, and that was it. So I've already sold one of them.
Yeah, right. Okay. So talk to us about the different sound. You know, you just played some of them earlier today, and the differences in sound are significant. I've never heard so many pianos next to each other, neck to neck, and it's really obvious.
Yes. Well, so there are two or three qualities that a piano can have.
Yeah.
One is projection. Now, projection is to do with the relationship of the curvature of the soundboard in other words, the angle of the string to the bridge on the soundboard, which is called downbearing, which you can measure, you know, you can put a feeler gauge and measure the degrees of downbearing. When you rebuild an old piano, often the bridge, especially on a grand, will have collapsed a bit. And that's why they talk of collapsed soundboards and negative downbearing. It means rather than an angle up to the bridge, there's either no angle or a negative angle. And obviously that means that the string starts to ride up on the bridge pins, and so you don't get any constant connection and transmission of energy between the string and the soundboard. Because the soundboard is just a big resonator. It's like the back of a guitar.
Yeah.
So length of string is obviously important. So if you want a good, strong tone in the bass, you need a big piano. So the taller the piano upright, obviously the better.
Mm.
Modern pianos tend to be a bit lacking in the top half octave, you know, so that's down to there again, growth rings in the soundboard. Now, in the early part of the century, the trees that they were using and milling to make soundboards were largely old growth timber. The longer a tree grows, the closer the growth rings get together, the better the resonant properties of the timber. So certain timbers, with a piano and piano design, the wood has to be light. That's why they mostly use spruce. You know, it has to be light, strong, with really good resonant properties. So even now, the best pianos in the world are made with either Scandinavian spruce or Canadian spruce, but they have to grow in northern climate. It's to do with the angle of the sun, and you know, there's all sorts of jiggery pokery to do with wood and piano design, you know. And
right. And there aren't any sources for wood in the southern hemisphere.
Well, there are, and some of the old Beales were made with really good timber as well.
Mm.
But it was largely trial and error.
Yeah.
Beale were the largest piano manufacturer in the British Empire in the turn of the century. You know, it's a funny thing. You know, people say, "Oh, piano tuning's a dying art." You know, piano, no one buys pianos anymore. But in truth, new pianos are still being sold. There was a bit of a lull in the last 5 or 10 years, but it's picked up again. It actually picked up again during COVID, to the point where now you have to wait a significant amount of time when you order a new piano because of supply chain issues. And also, you know, problems with the actual piano manufacturers being able to source the components from wherever it is they get them, you know. And most of the pianos in the world are made in China because China's become aspirational.
Yeah.
And this is quite a good thing, really. I mean, Chinese piano manufacturers improved out of sight in the last 5 years.
Awesome.
In the early days, they were just copying things, so they were producing things that looked like pianos.
But the quality has caught up, is what you're saying?
To some extent.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'll find that where they're unable to source quality materials, then they'll... Actually, one of the main things that improved their quality was as pianos factories in Europe closed, they would poach the talent and encourage them to come over to China and look at their manufacturing techniques and processes and advise them.
Okay, so quality is rising. That's a good tendency. We like that.
Longevity, you know, often you don't know for 10, 20, 30 years whether a piano is going to last. I mean, majority of the pianos that we fix, the older ones, are from that golden era of piano design and manufacture, which was from around about 1890 through to the First World War.
I see. Well, why is that called the golden era? What's different?
I'm calling it the golden era from my experience.
Yeah, right.
And, well, for the reasons I stated before, the fact that the woods were sourced and they had more choice, the fact that the artisans were highly skilled and mass production techniques hadn't taken over, they hadn't tried to do silly things like replace solid wood components with little plastic clips that were or rubber grommets that would only last for 10, 20 years. Certain manufacturers had certain issues. Like every Yamaha piano from the 70s and 80s, they used a sort of cord for the hammer spring loop that only lasted 20 or 30 years. So every single one now, you touch the cord and it just disintegrates.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So you have to pull it apart and it's quite a major operation to replace all of those. The Yamaha also had a problem for a few years where they used a different sort of material for the key fronts and the key tops, and they used to go yellow, sometimes orange, dark brown. So you look at a Yamaha and it's got dark brown, you go, oh, 70s.
Yeah, right. Okay, wow. Look, I would love to hear some of the pianos. Shall we see if we can take our microphones and the recorder? And I would like to maybe just show us some of the sort of extremes, sonically, pianos that have different qualities.
Yes.
So where shall we start?
Let's start with the pretty one in the corner.
All right.
This is a Beal Northcote.
All right. We're walking across the room. Watching the cable. Yep, that's good. It is packed with pianos, so we're just making our way through a narrow pathway here. Pianos left, right, and center. That's the piano with the amazing woodwork that immediately caught my eye.
I often find that people neglect, in terms of miking techniques on pianos, they neglect the possibility of putting mics around the back because most of the sound comes out of the back.
Yeah, right. But uprights are often backed against a wall, so that's not necessarily accessible.
Well, you can always move it out a bit.
Okay. Yeah, right. But yeah. Show us how this one sounds.
It's all about the sustain. How long does the sound take to go away?
No. To me, it sounds absolutely gorgeous. It's got everything that I love about pianos. It's got the, you know, the brightness. It's got the sustain, of course, but it's also warm.
Yes.
But it's not muffled.
No.
It's, you know, clean. It's transparent, but it's got character.
I love this. Royal Upright Concert Grand.
Love it.
Okay.
And how old is this piano approximately?
It's around about 1901.
Wow. So that is now about 120 years.
This wow. Here is a Lipp. It's a German piano, and it's from 1885.
Wow.
We'll listen to that one as well.
Okay, let's move across. Excuse all the handling noises, please. So this is...
A Richard Lipp.
Richard Lipp.
From 1885.
Beautiful. Can you explain what differences you hear when you play these two pianos?
To me, the sound of the Lipp, it's probably the hammers are a little bit softer. It's a little bit more, I would say there was less springiness in the soundboard. So it's a little flatter than the Beale. The Beale had a little more life. There's another Beale over here from 1922, and it... has a combination of both of those.
So wait a second, we're just moving on to the next one. Let me just drop the stand that I need to hold your microphone.
Oh. I think you're going to have to do a bit of editing here.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I think I need to ask the listeners to forgive a lot of handling noise here today.
A lot of what I like about pianos is their dynamic range. You have to be able to play really, really softly, you know, so if you... And, you know, and I would say that this one has a majestic tone.
You know,
it kind of...
I can relate to that.
It's the sort of thing you need to play the national anthem on.
Lovely. Okay.
Perhaps we should compare that with some of the...
Something more modern?
Something more modern. Mm-hmm. You know? So there, I have two Yamahas here.
Okay. How old would this one be?
This is...
it's a lovely black.
1981. Doesn't quite have the depth that the older ones have. But it's very clear. Just like to compare that with that's 121 centimeter Yamaha, is common size for a professional model, but just over to your back, the rear of you here is the 131.
Okay, let's swap seats. Okay, it is a little bit tight, but we're getting here. Cable chaos. Yep. All right. So they both look very similar, actually. But this one is now taller. and therefore longer strings. Got it.
Still not as tall as the Beal that we heard with the majestic tone.
That is a beautiful one as well. That's a beautiful tone. But I can see, you know, what you said about the Yamaha sounding different to the Beals.
Yes.
And my first response is that I guess, you know, if it stands by itself, I would probably prefer the Beal.
Yeah.
But if I now imagine this piano being part of a busy arrangement with drums and guitars and bass and
exactly.
other instruments,
that's why
maybe
Yamaha
you would want to choose a Yamaha for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly, if we can manage to work our way around, because I also have a couple of Kawais here. We'll go around this
okay.
way. It's easy.
All right. Let's try to get. Oh, okay. It's getting chaotic with the cables.
Okay, so this is a kind of 70s, 1973, I think. It's a Kawai, and it's much smaller than the Yamahas we were listening to just now, but this is a kind of contradiction to my assertion that the longer string is necessarily better.
Okay, let's hear that.
Kawais tend to have a slightly heavier touch generally than Yamahas, and their tone is noticeably different. Yamahas are always a little bit brighter.
But, yeah, it's got a strong attack, I found. It's got a strong onset of the note.
Even sustain though.
Lovely, lovely.
I think we should compare it with the concert grand.
Yes, so I guess this is probably the most amazing piano that I see around here, at least to my inexperienced eyes. But we're now looking at, what is this, a large Yamaha concert grand?
It's a 9-foot Yamaha CF that came out of the City Hall. We're looking after it while they rebuild. And it was bought for the first Sydney International Piano Competition in 1986.
What a beauty.
Yeah. And what a beauty. I negotiated the purchase of this Music Aviva, who's now defunct, in Lismore, paid for half, and the council paid for the other half. And we managed to get it back in, I think, the 90s for $55,000.
Wow.
And a new, they're around about 380,000.
Gee, okay, wow. Let's have a listen to this one. Wow, the volume of it is just unbelievable. It's loud.
Yeah, and if we were to compare that, I also have a 9-foot Steinway concert grand in there that we're selling on consignment, and it has strings for the most part that are original, I believe, and it still has projection, but nowhere near the projection that this has.
Yeah, well, this is impressive. Absolutely beautiful. Fred, if one of the listeners wants to reach out to you and maybe buy a piano of you or get their piano serviced, what's the best way to contact you?
Probably just by phone. Yep. Phone or email. It's specialtypianos@gmail.com or 0412-216-019.
And I'm going to put the contact details in the show notes as well. So if anybody wants to reach out, just go to the end of the episode, click the button, scroll down, and Fred's contacts will be there. So, yeah, well, I really appreciate you showing us around and sharing all your wisdom about pianos. This is really impressive. Thank you so much.
Thank you, yeah. Thanks for making the journey. Cheers.
This was piano specialist Dr. Fred Cole on the Production Talk podcast. Thank you, Fred. It was amazing to see your showroom, and thank you for explaining all the ins and outs about pianos. That was really insightful. Much appreciated. If you listened to last week's episode, you know that I launched a survey to find out more about how you like the podcast and what I can do better. Unfortunately, the responses have been a little bit slow, so I'd just like to remind all of you to please contribute and let me know what you think. I really need to know more about your thoughts so that I can make the podcast better for you. Please head over to mixartist.com.au/survey. I decided to make it a bit more attractive by throwing in a little giveaway. The survey is anonymous, but if you decide to leave your contact details, you will be going into the draw for a 1-hour one-on-one music production coaching session with me personally. That's just you and I. Anything you want to talk about, you can show me your music, we can give you feedback, we can talk about the problems that you have, we can talk about your workflows, anything that you want. 1 hour, you, me, focused on your music. That's in the draw for you. So to win this, you first have to fill out the survey, please, and give me some feedback. I really appreciate this. Thank you very much. Head over to mixartist.com.au/survey. It's mixartist.com.au/survey. Head over straight away. Thank you so much. If you want to reach out to me for music production, of course, you can do so via my website, mixartist.com.au, where we offer high-end studio recording services on the East Coast of Australia and, of course, online mixing services for all clients worldwide. It's mixartist.com.au. Okay, that's all for today. Thank you very much. I shall see you next week. Bye for now.